DW Africa Link.
Lawmakers in Uganda recently passed a government-backed bill that would permit civilian trials in military courts. The Uganda People's Defense Forces Bill, that's the UPDF bill, has sparked significant concern and criticism, mainly because it defies a Supreme Court ruling from January 2025 that had declared such trials unconstitutional. The court had ruled that civilians can't be court-martialed, questioning the competence of untrained military officers to dispense justice. Critics argue that this would allow President Museveni to crack down on the opposition. So what really is going on? And is there a way out of this? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Opposition figures, rights activists, and others insist that such legislation is anti-democratic. They say the bill is a danger to everyone who opposes President Yoweri Museveni, who has held power since 1986. While all this is happening, longtime opposition leader Kizza Besigye has been jailed since November 2024 over alleged treason charges. His lawyers say it is politically motivated. Let's dig into the matter with Dr. Sarah Berete, Executive Director for the Center for Constitutional Governance. I also have DW's Frank Yiga, my colleague in Kampala, Uganda. Welcome to Africa Link. Frank, give me the background of all of this. Explain to us exactly how we got to this point and what this passed bill means.
Well, it's been on for quite some time, because if I'm to recall, according to my reports here, in 2016, the Nakawa Court member of parliament, Michael Kabaziruka, filed a petition before the Constitutional Court challenging the trial of civilians in the military court. That was in 2016. And then fast forward, we also, in 2024, that was last year in November, Dr. Kizza Besigye was abducted in Kenya and tried before the General Court Martial in Makindye. It went building and building until we got to this point. You know, the public, even their representatives, were against, you know, having civilians arraign before the military court martial. So it stems way back, say in 2016, it went on building up to the time when it was passed.
Right. And now the parliament has passed it. It's awaiting the signature of the president to make it law, right?
Yeah, definitely. It awaits the president's signature. And of course, the writing is on the wall. It's crystal clear that he's going to append his signature to it, because we know it's clear that he's behind it, he's pushing it, and definitely it won't go back to parliament. Although some members of public are saying, no, he may send it back to parliament to amend some clauses here and there. But to me personally, the way I see things and the way I've been observing this bill, he's going to append this. He's just waiting to sign, to turn it into law.
Right. Let me come to you, Dr. Berete. You know, if you look at it, this parliament passed bill would allow civilians to be tried by military courts. Or how do you react to this?
Well, it's very unfortunate that the parliament reenacted, rebuild clauses of the UPDF Principal Act, because the controversy surrounding, you know, the trial of civilians in court martial was challenged in court three times. The Supreme Court, in no uncertain terms, held that it's unconstitutional to try civilians in military courts. And the Constitutional Court gave, you know, advisory orders to government on how to professionalize military courts for service offenses and for the discipline and conduct of people who have voluntarily subjected themselves to military law, and those are soldiers. But the overreach of the executive to encroach on the mandate of the judiciary and bring civilians under their armpit and military jurisdiction is really depressing to us as citizens, and it jeopardizes the status of civil and political rights of citizens, especially those in active politics that are foreign victim of military trials in previously.
Right, right. There are some that will say that there's been some amendments made, and isn't it Parliament's right to actually, you know, pass bills, amend and sort of pass bills, and that's what they are doing. What's your response to that?
Well, Parliament under Article 92 of the Constitution is prohibited from enacting a law aimed at defeating any court decision or judgment or the parties thereto. So when the court holds that it is unconstitutional to try civilians in military courts and further advises that where civilians jointly with serving soldiers commit a crime together, such offenses should be tried by civilian courts. The court further advised that the military courts can only try civilians in exceptional circumstances that should be prior demonstrated in civilian courts on a case-by-case basis. And what the regime did was to just go under previously repealed sections and put a clause that these are exceptional circumstances and further expand the nature of the offenses that involve civilians that can be tried in military courts. It's really depressing.
Right. So you're saying that even with the amendments that they made, it's still illegal per the Constitution. Is that what you're saying?
Parliament on clause 30 of the new bill acted in contempt of the Supreme Court. And I wish we had an avenue where to, you know, individually punish these MPs that are in contempt of the Supreme Court, because the function of MPs is to promote the constitutionalism and protect the Constitution. So they cannot plead ignorance of the Constitution, because their main job is to protect the Constitution.
So what do you think this means? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion, you know, across different media platforms that, you know, President Yoweri Museveni, you know, is somehow influencing Ugandan lawmakers to basically do his bidding. How do you react to that?
Well, the president has been using military courts as a tool for repression, because most of the people charged in these courts are his competitors, political competitors. So if he cannot, he has been settling political arguments in using a military court, and by virtue of his office as the commanding chief of the defense forces, but also a chair of the military high command, these courts give him judicial power. He's like the chief justice of military courts. So even previously, for court to pass a sentence, they would first consult with the army high command, which endorse or suggest a new sentence, meaning that he is exercising dual function of head of executive but also quasi judicial power in military courts as a chief justice.
And that's what makes it wrong.
Fundamentally wrong.
Dr. Beretta, I'll come back to you in a bit. Let me get back to Frank, because Frank, it's understandable that this has, you know, brought about a lot of talk, and the debate is continuing about the rights or wrongs of this. Mainly wrongs is what people have been discussing, but give us a fair idea how people have been reacting to this across social media, and how indeed the mainstream media is covering the story so far.
Well, to begin with, social media was awash with the reports on the UPDF amendment bill. It was the lead conversation on all platforms. The reports have been building up for quite some time, started last week actually, And then they went on following, posting, uploading stories. And then the people I talked to, and maybe the reports I kept seeing on social media, people were so bitter. They were on tension, they were worried, and others in fear that some clauses in the bill will definitely make them likely criminals to face the military court. Many people are still wondering about the contentious clause in the act, in the bill, which says exceptional circumstances that qualify civilians to be tried in military courts. They also fail to interpret what should be considered a military attire. It could be the shoes. Remember, soldiers have different types of shoes. So if you're caught in the wrong side of the law, definitely you'll be charged in the court martial. There's also the berets. The berets, I mean, are worn by so many young people, especially those in politics. Even in the entertainment industry, they wear these berets. So all those stand chances of being in the military courts, the right. belts, I mean, there's so much. And also in the mainstream media, the reports about this bill equally dominated, the TVs, radios, there were talk shows, news bulletins. There was even programs where Honorable Sarah Birete participated talking about this very subject. And people were generally worried that how is this bill going to operate? What chances do they have for safety?
Right. Talking about people being worried, supporters of Bobi Wine, leader of Uganda's main opposition party as a National Unity Platform, NUP, they say that the new government will target them because of their red berets. You touched on it a bit earlier, and their uniforms. Tell us more about their concerns.
National Unity Platform have their party uniform of color red, and sometimes they wear red berets. The army claims that the berets are similar to those of the military police. The black shoes and the designs of the Bobi Wine's party uniform make it similar to those of the military uniform. So in 2020, if I'm taking you back, a total of 41 supporters of National Unity Platform were arrested in a security raid and remanded for allegedly possessing military fatigues. The army has strongly come out many times to remind them and warn them against the red berets. What's interesting is that wearing of short-sleeved suits, here we locally call them Kaunda suits, will also be illegal according to the UPDF amendment bill, because the army wears them, and on several occasions we've seen Bobi Wine wearing the same suit. Even other opposition politicians, they wear short-sleeved suits. So according to the army, they also have a similar attire. So when you're found wearing such, you're likely to be charged in the military court. That makes him a target, because or makes them targets, those in opposition, because according to the bill, it resembles the army uniform. So that's what the NUP and Bobi Wine are worried of.
Right. It's understandable what the concerns are. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Africa Link podcast. Recently, Uganda's parliament passed an amended law that permits military tribunals to try civilians. And this has prompted protests from the opposition, who say the move violated a Supreme Court ruling in January that banned such trials. Let me come to you, Dr. Birete.
It's the politicization and Museveni's political comfort to use these courts for political persecution. So what is the argument today? Uganda is not lacking efficient civilian courts, is not lacking judges, and is not lacking offenses. All the offenses created under Clause 30 or the previous repealed sections of the UPDF Act are present in our penal code as a country. So that argument is null and void.
Okay. So How would you describe the Museveni of 1986, right, when he took power and portrayed himself as a true believer in constitutionalism, compared to the Museveni of today? You know, we're talking about him being in power now for 40 years.
Well, absolute power corrupts, and excessive absolute power really goes beyond corrupting. I think the two personalities are completely different. First of all, we have the Museveni of 1986 was a youthful leader at 42 years, very vigilant, courageous, and his mind and soul spoke the soul of the nation. After so many years in power with so many excesses and impunity, the current Museveni is leading only through intimidation, fear, or bribery. We have an election coming up. He will dish out a lot of money. This very amendment was purchased with $100 million bribe, dished out by his office, confirmed in his own writing that he's bribing legislators. The removal of presidential safeguards that could have taken him out of power were removed after bribery by himself. So you cannot compare the two leaders. He has lost legitimacy, but he has also lost control of the state. Whereas he kept himself in power through micromanaging, now right, that efficiency to micromanage has collapsed through advanced edge.
The tension between judicial independence and executive legislative power has really been a bone of contention. It continues to influence the country's democratic trajectory. Do you foresee any changes in this dynamic soon? Is there anything that suggests that things could change for the better?
Things can only change if we manage to get a transition. Even after the passing of wrong provisions in the bill, the president was bashing courts as he celebrated the rubber stamp MPs, that courts had created a problem. You know, ideally, the basic tenets of democracy require that even if you disagree with a court decision, you respect and uphold it. But the continuous attacks on the judiciary, where the majority decision in 5-2 ruled that it's unconstitutional to try civilians in court martial. So even recently, as the president was thanking MPs for endorsing his wishes in the law, he was attacking judges.
Dr. Beretti, I'll be coming to you in a bit to wrap it up. But as part of wrapping it up, let me stick with you, Frank, because now, as you say, you feel that this bill is going to be signed by President Museveni and then it will become law. Is there any way to prevent that from happening, in your opinion? What happens next? What happens next now?
Well, what happens next now is to go by the flow. Whatever he decides will definitely happen, because the judges appointed by the president, he has influence. So I don't think there will be, we stand any chance of having this reversed.
Right. Dr. Beretti, you have the final word. Is it as Frank is saying, that there really is no hope? Is there any way to overturn this? What happens next?
Well, I think the Supreme Court legally cannot, swallow their own words. They have already set a precedent. They cannot rule otherwise. The only challenge is that they could postpone hearing of such petitions. It might take us a little time, but the Constitution, the Supreme Court cannot rule otherwise on the same issue that they have previously ruled on. We are governed by precedents under the common law regime.
Okay, so giving it a bit of hope, or keeping a bit of hope alive, is what I sense from you. Thank you very much, both of you, for your time. Dr. Sarah Beretti, Executive Director for the Center for Constitutional Governance, and also DW's Frank Yiga, my colleague in Kampala, Uganda. Thank you to the both of you.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
In contrast to Uganda, South Africa's constitution fundamentally entrenches the separation of powers among the executive, legislature, and judiciary. A notable characteristic of South African politics is the impressive collaboration among its diverse political parties. Despite ideological differences, they frequently transcend disagreements to pass legislation that directly benefits the nation's citizens, thereby showcasing the political system's inherent strength and stability. To provide further insight, I have invited our correspondent Nontoko Zumchunu, who is currently in Cape Town, South Africa. Hello, Nonto. So, how does South Africa's parliament exercise its oversight role?
Well, hi, Eddie. In terms of South Africa practicing its role or oversight role, particularly the parliament, I think we stand at a very, I'd say, different position than Uganda, simply because I think what South Africa has that is still very much at work here is the rule of law. And I think it is, I would dare to say that it is very strong and still pretty much respected. And so each sphere of leadership and power has its checks and balances and its boundaries in terms of how far they can exercise their role and exercise their power as leaders. So obviously the president would have more power. That's why we have a president over other roles such as the ministers and so on and so forth. But there's an accountability aspect to right. that power, and they can only practice it to a certain extent. And obviously that has to be measured against the constitution, which for us is a very democratic constitution. And right. so the president can only really go so far in terms of making laws and regulations.
Yeah, right. I mean, as a constitution is supposed to be talking about separation of powers, the executive, the judiciary, the legislature, you believe that is being practiced properly in South Africa overall?
Yes, I would say so. And I say this because we have instances where, for example, I'll make an example of a very recent event in South Africa where we had the Minister of Finance, for example, wanting to pass a budget that would require a 0.5 percentage point increase in value-added tax. And political parties in parliament were against it. And so in a case where that was not working and the accountability level in South Africa was weak, you would have had the minister pass that nonetheless. But you had political parties like the Democratic Alliance and the EFF taking the minister to court. Obviously, it was difficult. It was a back and forth. Right. But eventually, the minister came back and just a few days ago announced that would not be happening. So you have a very, I'd say, healthy democracy, as much as political parties have differences, but they do come together when something is to the benefit of South Africa or the majority. Right. And of course, you'll always have one or two who might be against the bill. But in general, I definitely think that bills do get passed and being supported by opposition parties.
Right. Good on you. Good on you, South Africans, really digging into this democracy thingy, so to speak. Nontoko Zumchunu, DW correspondent in Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you very much for your time. Back in Uganda, the bill now awaits President Yoweri Museveni's assent to become law. Given his previous statements, it is widely expected that he will sign it. However, legal challenges are anticipated, with some opposition figures already announcing plans to challenge the bill in court. So what do you think? Please share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. And don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW, made for mind.